I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to personally thank each and every one of you for coming here tonight. I hope I'm worthy of your time. And this is about step one. My bride had me take some notes, and if you don't mind, I'm going to refer to them. And I'm also going to watch my watch so I don't talk for 2 or 3 hours. Step one. You know, this is entirely my experience through practicing the 12 steps for 38 years. I don't know if I do it right. I don't know if I do it wrong. And this is just based on my experience. It's the only thing I really have to offer you. There's probably some combinations of other speakers and the books I've read and so forth, but this is just the way I do it. And I'd like to tell you, I'm not an expert by any definition of the word, and I'm just going to do the best I can. And one of the things about the steps, I'm going to talk for a minute about them. You know, they don't talk about alcohol or staying sober hardly at all. Alcohol is mentioned in the first part of the first step, and staying sober isn't even mentioned. And I know a lot of people that have stayed sober longer than me and have never worked the steps. I don't think it's imperative that people work the steps, because I've seen a lot of people go to meetings and stay sober. But the steps, Bill Wilson called them a design for living, and I agree, because right now I'm the oldest I've ever been. This is the longest I've ever been sober, and this is the happiest I've ever been. And a lot is to do with I have a good spouse, Marilyn, and a lot of it has to do with I try to practice the 12 steps in my everyday life, and I have for years. Listen, the steps are numbered. In fact, Helen and I were talking a little bit on the way up here. The steps are numbered because one prepares you for the next 11. One and two prepare you for the next 10. And so on and so forth. And I think that's why they're numbered. And it's real important that you get a good foundation. And step one is a good foundation. I don't believe you're ever going to... I know I'm never going to understand it fully, because my understanding of the steps evolves. They do offer a spiritual awakening. And each time I go through the steps, whether it's with a new guy or with it's a sponsor or somebody that knows more than me about it, I always have this spiritual awakening. It keeps me grounded. Please don't misunderstand. You don't have to perfectly understand step one to move on to step two. Because I don't think it's an AA slogan, but I hear it a lot in AA. More will be revealed. And as you continue to practice the steps, more has always been revealed to me. Every time. And it seems like when I think I know at all, I learn something else. And you know, I've been doing this for a while, and by now I know very little. But I'm still learning. I said to my sponsor one time when I did my first 4-step, and it was primitive compared to what the 4-step is today. I says, I'm glad that's over. And he says, no, it's like peeling an onion. You peel off a layer and you get to another one. And I says, what happens when you get to the middle? And I thought he'd been sober for 100 years, you know. And he says, I don't know, I'm still peeling. And I'm still peeling. That's kind of an overview of the way I see it in the 12 steps, and I'll calm down here in a minute. I went into the bathroom and said a prayer, and then I threw up. No. Step one And I believe I'm quoting this. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. And I kind of look at it in two parts. Powerlessness. Powerless over alcohol. I went to my first AA meeting. Not because I had a drinking problem or I believed I was an alcoholic. My first wife left me because of my drinking and drinking behavior. And I went into a detox / rehab down here at St. Vincent and a ploy to get her back. And I went to my first AA meeting there. I was in these real thin pajamas and jailhouse sneakers. And I went down Monday night into the cafeteria in 1977. And 300 of you mothers in street clothes walked in and sat down. I felt like, I used to have dreams that I was naked in high school, and that's what I felt like, you know? And the first guy that got up there, the chairman, he said, "I'm so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic." And I was horrified. I looked around and I thought, have you no shame? There's 300 people here. You can't know them all. And he introduced a speaker. Now, the speaker got up. He told what it was like, what happened, and what it was like today. And I felt him. It wasn't that I understood him. I felt him. I identified right to my very core with my heart. And what I believe that is a spiritual connection. And I think that's the very same spiritual connection that Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson experienced in 1935 that started the first AA meeting. And that goes on even today. Hopefully some of you will connect with me on that level tonight. Because when I go to a discussion meeting or a lead meeting, I'm there shaking my head in agreement, but I'm looking at the me inside of them. Okay? And I did that night. Now, before I went in there, if somebody would have said, "Is there any way you could possibly be an alcoholic?" I would have said, "No way in hell." And after that meeting, I knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, as much as I do tonight, that I was alcoholic. Now, according to step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That night I knew I was alcoholic, but I did not admit powerlessness. I was what you might call a high bottom drunk in those days. I never missed work. In fact, on the outside, I looked pretty good. You know, the house, the car, the kids. I didn't drink every day. I never missed work because I drank. In fact, most mornings when I'd get up, I was kind of hungover, but I'd eat something, go to work, and I was okay. You know, I was young and kind of tough. And that's, you know... And I didn't admit that I was powerless. I thought there was a way I could beat this. Because I'm young, I could nip it in the bud. And I wouldn't let myself progress because now I see it coming. I see what happens to these guys. I loved AA. I kept going to AA. I thought that'll help me. And I spent the next 35 months doing what I call experimenting with powerlessness. I didn't want to I didn't want to quit drinking completely. But I didn't want it to get worse, and I didn't want to have the trouble, and I didn't want to have the consequences. I just needed that. I call it that. You know that feeling you get when you dump a double shot of Southern Comfort? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll talk about that a lot this next 12 weeks. But anyway, and so in order to manage this, I made rules. Don't drink every day. Stop drinking wine. That gives you soft spots in your head, you know? stop drinking tequila because that makes you take back things I never stole. You know, and I started making rules, and none of don't drink anything but beer. Nobody ever became an alcoholic drinking beer. I tried all this, and it didn't work. I didn't even like dope by this time, and I thought, I'll just smoke dope. One joint, boy, and I was headed for a beer because it was like smoking fear, you know, and I'd want to get rid of that fear, and beer would take it away. In other words, and then when I first came in, I had a high bottom, and basically I had to spend the next 35 months lowering my bottom. I got addicted to another substance. My definition of addiction, and I was addicted to alcohol, is you go through withdrawal if you don't have that in your system. And that's why I had to have half a beer and get it to stick, and then I could drink the way I wanted to drink. A lot of times I threw up my first beer. But anyway, so what happened is eventually I came into the program. When I came into the program, I weighed 125 pounds. For the last 4 or 5 months, probably the most nutritious thing I put in my body was beer and whiskey. I had osteoporosis because there's no calcium in beer and whiskey. Beer, whiskey, jelly beans, and marshmallows. There's no calcium in any of it. And I didn't eat any jelly beans or marshmallows. But and at 125 pounds, to give you, I was like beer and bones. I weigh 185 now, and that's kind of a low estimate. And I mean, I could stand to lose 20 pounds probably, but at 125, I was just frail, and I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't eat anything. I had to start eating 2-RN cocktails, which are half Cairo syrup and half orange juice. And to be honest with you, I don't know if I could keep one of them down today. And raw eggs. Neil, an old guy, taught me how to. He bought me a dozen eggs, the small ones, and he had me put them in a glass and throwing them down like a shot. He says, "Don't chew them or try to taste them. Just swallow them." And he says, "If that doesn't stay down, you're going to die." So. That's where I came in, and I accepted I was powerless. I want to quote a paragraph in the Big Book. I used to say I'd never be a Big Book thumper, and I wrote this down because I didn't want to paraphrase it. It's the third paragraph on page 30 of the Big Book, and it says, if I wrote it down right, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion, and it says delusion, I want to talk about that a little bit later, that we were like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. It has to be smashed, crushed. And right now, you know, the first thing I say when I get up at AA, first thing I said when I got up here is I'm Buzz and I'm an alcoholic, because I'm still that same alcoholic that walked in here shaken, dope sick, withdrawn from alcohol at 125 pounds. The obsession to drink has been removed, but I'm still that person. That person is inside. And all it takes to wake it up is for me to think, it's been 38 years since I drank, I could have a draft. And guess what? I wake up that monster, and that monster will eat me. We have, you know, AA, I think, is the only thing that has no authority. No cops, there's no police, there's no laws in AA. We have two ultimate authorities. This is by Wilson's words, I'm paraphrasing. One's benign, one's malign. We have God, who says, do my will, and I'll help you, I'll save you. The other one is John Barleycorn, and it says, do my will, and I'll kill you, and he does. Everybody here knows somebody that's died of this horrendous disease. In fact, we're probably room full of people that shouldn't be here. Probably every one of you, if you think about it, you could have died sometime in your addiction. I could have many times, many different ways. But anyway, powerlessness is something I had to come to grips with. And I had to realize that I need you people. I need you people as much as I need water, as I need air, as I need food. Because without you folks together with me, I'll die. I learned early on, I cannot stay sober by myself. But you know what? In 38 years, I've never had to. Not for a minute. Now, my willpower or my human power or any human power could not have relieved my alcoholism. God would and could if he were sought. Okay, when I came in, I used to tell people I was an atheist, but I don't think I was. I think I was afraid of God. And I think they wrote the chapter to the agnostic for me. I was afraid of God. I'd tell people, my sponsor, I can remember, they'd read the steps before every meeting. And I said to him one time, why do they have to read that shit before every meeting? And he just whacked me in the back of the head. He was like 6'7". I mean, he was big enough to eat a bale of hay. So I didn't give him much static, you know. But anyway, if I ever forget that fact and want to do this on my own again, it's not going to be long before I'm drinking, because I can't stay sober by myself. And that's the reason I go to meetings. That's the reason I have a sponsor. And that's the reason I introduce myself as an alcoholic, because I am powerless. Now, I'm going to say something that sounds like I'm contradicting myself. Because that word powerless indicates I'm completely powerless. And the thing is, God gave me a reprieve. Because if this is full of Southern comfort, I'm not powerless over it. Because you know what? I can set that down and walk away from it. And it has no effect on me. I've been doing that for 38 years. This world has a lot of booze in it. There's probably a bar within 5 minutes of here. I don't know that, but I bet there is. In fact, I'd be willing to stake money on it. So alcohol's there, and I can drink it, but it has no power over me as long as I don't drink it. If this is full of Southern comfort, and I take a sip like that, that's when all bets are off. I'm not in control of my life anymore. The Southern Comfort is. The booze is. Can you tell I like Southern Comfort? Second part of that says that our lives had become unmanageable. That was easy for me at first. Because my life, I had $12 and $14 electric bills. So I was making good money. And they shut my electric off because I didn't pay the bill for 3 months, you know? My life was unmanageable. I just couldn't manage anything. And I was just screwing up one after another, you know? And alcohol, actually I was living a godless life in a way. But in a way, I had a God. It was called Miss Southern Comfort, you know. And that's how I managed my life. You know, I don't have the money. The light bill is due. And I don't have the money. And I feel terrible. I feel terribly guilty. And I drink half a fifth of Southern Comfort. It doesn't pay the light bill, but I didn't care. You know, and I felt good. And then the next morning I felt horrible. I felt guilty because the light bill still wasn't paid. I got drunk. I'm hungover. I feel terrible again. What would make me feel better? Oh yeah, the other half of that fifth would take it away. And I got in this cycle, this merry-go-round. And it was killing me. And I knew it. but I couldn't get off. That's unmanageable, okay? But here is the kicker. And here again, I had the delusion that once I quit drinking and drugging, I'd be able to manage things fine, okay? And I've used that word delusion, and I used to say it's either an illusion or a delusion. I'm not sure which. So I looked up delusion today, and one of the definitions was delusion, in this case, is a false or unrealistic belief or opinion. And see, I thought once I stopped drinking and drugging that I could manage my life fine. That was my enemy, was Miss Southern Comfort. And I got sober. Well, I'll tell you something. 38 years sober, I still cannot manage my own life. It's my life is as unmanageable now as it was when I was drinking, only it's more subtle. Or subtle. I love that. A guy said subtle to me one time and I couldn't keep a straight face, you know. Why do they put a B in that word? I don't know. But they do. But anyway, it's more subtle because it sneaks up on me until all of a sudden my life is a mess and the pain's there and the misery's there and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent because I've been managing my own life. Now, I know this, that I get in trouble every time I manage my life. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was also a preacher, and he said, go to Romans chapter 7, verse 14, or maybe it's the other way around. And I went there, and Paul wrote Romans, and I always thought Paul wasn't that much different when he became an apostle than he was when he was a Pharisee, and he needed to get his ass to some Al-Anon meetings. But anyway, well, Paul was a little controlling, let's face it, okay? But anyway, he was talking about, I know the law, and the law is good, and why do I break the law? It's because I'm human. And that hit me. I'm doing the same thing. So I think this is what I do, and it's a human characteristic, and I have to keep coming back to meetings. I have to have a sponsor, and I have to sponsor guys. I think the guys I sponsor a lot of times teach me more than anybody else. And you watch the guys you sponsor, and sometimes you think, damn, you know, and they'll teach you a lot. But anyway, so what happened when I was drinking, and especially in those 35 months when I was drinking and going to AA, and if you're new here, don't do that. It's like just terrible. I thought, you don't fit in nowhere, believe me. I went into the town tavern where Chaz used to bartend at one time, and I went in there, and I was going to 12-step the guys in there, and they threw me right through the screen door. Didn't open it, just threw me through it, you know? But the town tavern was one of those bars that you could tell guys from out of town because they'd go in the restroom, men's room. Local guys just kind of kicked the door open and peed in, you know? They had, this is the truth, they had a toilet seat hanging on a nail on the wall. I drank in those high class places like that. And what would happen is the drinking, the consequences would get bad, and I'd get humble, and I'd swear I'll never drink again. My mom and my ex-wife said, "You're such a good liar." And you know, I was never lying when I said I'd never drink again. I meant it when the pain was terrible. And I would humble myself and I'd mean it. I wasn't going to drink again. But then I'd start feeling a little better and I'd think, that wasn't that bad. and I'd go back to it. And I would a lot of times in that 35 months I would run to AA and I'd stay sober for a while. And then pretty soon I'd think, I was sober, but I there was a guy by the name of Smokey said, when you get sober, you're supposed to quit stealing horses. And in those days, I was still selling weed and speed, and that isn't a recovery type thing, you know. And I would go to the bars, I would rationalize it. Well, those guys are acting like idiots, and it helps me stay sober looking out. And I'd get drunk. And I'd get drunk, and it would cycle. Then the pain would increase. And the thing is, I don't think that's changed, because if I walk away from AA, it's not long before I get restless, irritable, and discontent. And if I get restless, irritable, and discontent, the pain increases, and I'm going to go back to drinking. I actually drank to medicate pain most of the time. This is a hard part of step one for me and my sobriety, because the resurgence of my ego. I often feel like my ego is my enemy in disguise, because it's me telling me, it's just like Paul, it's me telling me it's okay to do something. I know it's not okay. And I wonder, why do I do that when I know better? I don't know. I guess it's a human part of me. That's what I do. When things are going well, my ego tells me everything's going well. You know how longer I have to focus on your program. You don't need AA. You don't need God. I can handle this myself, you know. And one of the things I do when I start to, my ego starts to reinsert itself, is I have a lot of things that are more important than AA. Business or job or relationship or even fishing. And the thing is, the truth is, and I know this, nothing is more important than my sobriety. And the reason that is, I'm a lot of things. I'm a believer in God. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a fisherman. But you know what? If I get drunk, that's the only thing I am, is a drunk. I walk away from God. Everybody in my life, the people that love me, it gets very expensive for them. And the thing is, you see, when I slip away from my program, my life gets painful again. And I'm not good at enduring pain, especially the emotional kind. It's going to get so bad, because AA is where I go to for my medicine. I've talked about this with Mike. It's my medicine. I don't have to shoot insulin or something like that. I don't have to take a pill. But I come to meetings. And when I come to a meeting, I can tell it's my medicine, because I always feel better after a meeting. Never fails. You know, it never fails, so it is. And I thank God for that knowledge. And I still go on. They call it dry drunks. The professional community calls it relapse syndrome, stinking thinking. Actually, Bill Wilson coined the phrase "had a slip," and today it's evolved in, when somebody says they had a slip, they got drunk. He didn't get drunk. He just started slipping away from the program. And I do that a lot. But the thing is, and I asked Neil one time, I was on a hell of a dry drunk. I had a girlfriend that was just making me crazy. And I stopped and I was talking to him, and he talked me down. It took a couple of hours. It was the middle of the night, and it was a cold night. And I said, "Neil, why don't you go on dry drunks?" He just kind of laughed. And Neil was real quiet. The things he said was real profound. Yeah, and he just said, "Oh, I go on dry drunks. I just catch them a lot quicker than you do." And I think that's the secret, it's catching them quicker. We're going to talk about that more. One of this long timer, and I'm going to about to wrap this up. The long timer said to me one time, "You can swim in whiskey if you don't, as long as you don't open your mouth." and then he'd take a puff on this stubby cigar. I don't know whether he got him out of an ashtray or not, but I never saw him with a big cigar. And he'd take a puff on it and he'd blow it out, but then he'd say, if you swim in it long enough, you're going to open your mouth. And the thing is, when I get away from AA, I'm swimming in whiskey, and I try not to swim in it too long. That's why I have a sponsor. I sponsor others, still go to AA. I need to be reminded that I'm still powerless and I still cannot manage my own life. And that's what I prepared to talk to you tonight. I don't know how long I've talked, but we have about 12, 13 minutes that I'm supposed to answer questions. So go ahead. Shoot. Yeah, I'll answer any questions I can. Thank you. You're all very kind.
Any questions for him?
Helen.
I gotta go around.
Yes, Helen.
Sorry if it does.
Thank you so much, Buzz. It was great to hear you. I always have enjoyed what you've had to say.
Thank you. You get a ride home now.
Oh, thank you. But my question is, after those 35 months, what finally made the difference that you decided to put down that drink? And
actually, it wasn't anything to do with powerless. I was in the middle of the night. My sponsor, I told you he was big, he came to get me because a girl from the university wanted to be 12-stepped, and it was like one of the rules they had on this hotline he was on. If you go to a member of the opposite sex, you take a member of the opposite sex with you. And he said, you're coming with me. And I says, don't you have to have a girl? And he says, shut up or I'll make you wear a dress. And I went, and I really don't know. I was either 4 or 6 days sober. And I went there, and I think Big Jim had about 14 years, and her sobriety date was that day about 3 hours earlier. And she couldn't identify, 14 years, he might as well have 400. I had like 4 days or 6 days, and she's saying, how did you do it? And I ended up talking to her, and the thing is, when I left, I was a different person. In here, once you start sharing, it's like an unwritten contract that I was telling her what I needed to hear, and I can't stress, help others. And that really didn't have much to do with step one. But I felt, what's she going to think if I get drunk? And I stayed sober from that very day on, and she's sober now many years. She didn't stay sober then, but she is. I'd love to see her. I haven't seen her in 15 years, but her brother goes to meetings around here, so I kind of stay in touch vicariously through him. But that's what guys. Anybody else? I welcome questions, you know. Okay, Gina.
Regina, alcoholic.
Regina, yeah.
Thanks, Buzz. So when you're talking about, you know, a slip or a dry drunk or when you catch yourself stinking thinking, do you have a method after 38 years when you catch this? Is there some suggestion you can give those of us who do that semi-regularly?
The thing is, always what's wrong. When I start going on a dry drunk or slipping away, the relapse dynamic, whatever you call it, is I'm managing my life myself. And what I have to do is back to basics. And the basics is I call my sponsor. I call people I sponsor. I tell my bride. I go to meetings. And I tell them my addiction. That's a NA term. But I tell people. And I had the hardest time. I went into a terrible depression when I was 27 years sober, and I thought, how can I confess this to people that have less sobriety, that, you know, I'm miserable and I'm 27 years sober. But the thing is, I don't care how long you're sober, if you're not doing the basics, I think you get restless, irritable, and discontent. That's why, like, there's a speaker, Bob Darrow, he talks about a lot of people with 25, 30, 35 years that get drunk, and that's what happens to them. And I'm afraid that would happen to me. So what I do is back to basics. I start, you know, and telling somebody you're miserable is a real kick in the ego. You know, it's like, yeah, I know, you got 2 years sober. You're doing better than me, buddy. I'm 27 years sober, and it sucks. And you start talking, and it isn't very long. It's like, once I get honest and once I get humble, it's not very long before I'm feeling good and doing the right things. That's what Neil said when he said, I go on dry drunks as much as you do. I just catch them quick. At first, I didn't catch them very quick. Oh, man. I was miserable. You're welcome. You're so welcome. I just loved you, you know. I still got to get you that book, you know. Anybody else? Because I got another 7 minutes that they're paying me for here. Uh-oh. Yeah. Kevin.
You know, we got 50 people here, and they can't even come up with a question. You must have intimidated them.
We have a lady here.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, hello, Karen.
And I just wanted to share, you know, I heard a couple things I really needed to hear tonight. One was that if I'm starting to walk away from these rooms, I'm starting to swim in this deep. And I thought, wow, that is so true. And the other thing I heard was that I'm tired, sorry. It's a little, but
it's okay.
But the I guess the thing and you talked about the pain, and I think that's really important for alcoholics to hear, is that, you know, we're not promised a pain-free life.
No.
That's not what, at least that's not been my experience, but what we are promised is that we'll have some tools to be able to use and work through things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing you said about, you know, how much you need every alcoholic in this room. And I thought, wow, that is so true.
Yeah.
Because I cannot stay sober alone.
I can't either.
Yeah. And, you know, and I heard this guy, he got up once, he had 41 years of sobriety, and he just said, I need your help.
Yes.
And I just thought, oh my gosh. You know, so that humility is really what does keep us sober, I believe. So I'm not really asking any questions, but I just got a whole lot of what you shared. So thank you so much.
Thank you. One of the best prayers I think I ever heard was a guy just looked up and he said, stay close, I need you. And that's what I need you folks to do, stay close because I need you. I look around this room and there's scores of people in here that have helped me.
Hi, Buzz. Doug, alcoholic.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, what part does your higher power play in at least attempting manageability?
My higher power in AA is what manage. As long as my higher power is in charge. I have grosser handicaps that Bill Wilson talks about in a big book. Joe McHugh talks about it, and my grosser handicaps are I'm impatient and controlling and inconsiderate, and as soon as I start to control things, I get impatient and controlling and inconsiderate, because I have to be in control. When I let him be in control, it's like I accept things as God's will, and if it takes a little longer, especially when you start sponsoring people, I don't know if you have or not, but when I sponsor people, I see them going down a road where they're going to get drunk, and in the big book it says John Barleycorn, no it isn't, it's 12 and 12, I think it says John Barleycorn's our best advocate, sometimes I need to let him do his work too. And yeah, the higher power plays a great part in it. I didn't go into that too much tonight because in step one, I was extremely agnostic. I was afraid of God because it was a punishing God, and the things I did, I couldn't see him ever forgiven. I did some pretty bad things when I was out there. So I hope that answers your question. I'm going to start talking more next week about a power greater than myself. And the next week I'll probably start talking about God a little bit. I had a sponsee one time. He says, "Buzz, I don't like working the steps, and I don't want to talk about this God thing." I says, "That's all I got." You know, if you want to stay sober, go punch a cop. You'll stay sober for a while.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Okay.